Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,600 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special guest is Kenneth Paul Callison, and he is author of The Way to World Peace, An Idea Whose Time Has Come. In an era marked by geopolitical conflict, environmental instability, and widespread uncertainty about humanity's future, entrepreneur and researcher Kenneth Paul Callison has written a new work that reframes world peace not as an idealistic dream, but as an achievable evolutionary step for human species. The Way to World Peace is an exploration of how humanity arrived at this pivotal moment and how we can choose a path forward for survival, unification, and sustainable peace. Kenneth Paul Callison is author of The Way to World Peace, and he is also founder of Allied Beauty Experts in Denver, Colorado. Kenneth built a nationally recognized company by creating a state-of-the-art online insurance processing system and spearheading initiatives spanning R&D in medical technology, engineering, FDA process work, and contract negotiation, and the large-scale business management. Kenneth holds 3 patents in the beauty and medical industries. He's a visionary leader dedicated to creating a world free from militarization, poverty, and the escalating global water crisis and widespread environmental degradation. Kenneth also believes humanity is capable of profound transformation and that the time to act is now. For more information, you can visit his website at atimeforhumanity.org. And with that, I'd like to welcome Ken to the show. Good day, Ken.
Oh, thank you, Robert. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Boy, it's always nice to talk about world peace. As a matter of fact, I was mentioning our interview today to several friends, and they just had a big sigh and said, oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Well, it certainly is achievable. We've convinced ourselves that it's impossible, but people say, well, you can't talk yourself into peace. Well, we talk ourselves into war every day. So yes, you can.
Yes, you can. So I usually like to start the show by asking an author what inspired them or what was the spark to write this book at this time. So the Way to World Peace, why now?
Well, I was always interested in the subject. I was raised in the sciences and metaphysics and philosophy and so forth as a pup, you know, so ever since I was a child. But, you know, we're living at a time when our technological power, our weapons of war have way outpaced our wisdom. We are facing several crises. The third of the planet lives in dire poverty. We're usually at any given time for the last several hundred years, we're in about 30 wars at a time planet-wide. We're going to run out of water pretty quickly here. That's going to cause a lot of conflict. So by the year 2040, only half of the population on the planet will have access to clean water. And we're collapsing our ecosystem. It's much more than just global warming. So we're closer to the potential of extinction than we ever were. I wrote the book because, you know, we're at a time when we're at a crossroads when our choices now will determine whether humanity evolves, whether we're worthy to evolve. We have to make that decision.
Yeah. I have noticed through the 14 years that I have done the podcast that at certain times, topics kind of group together. And lately, it has been the next 100 years as the possible period for extinction. And, you know, to me, it's just kind of like a zeitgeist that's going on about this topic. And it seems that whenever there is such an increase in discussion, that it seems to be for a very good reason.
I would agree. Right now, I think we are losing our joy. We have a loss of belief in ourselves and the future. Back in 2017, I came out with the position that within the next 100 years, that we would be facing the possibility of the destruction of our civilization, and that that course can be altered. So we begin to approach that potential. It's interesting, Stephen Hawking came out and said the same thing a few years later, because you are correct. At any given moment, the movement of mankind's mind upon this earth kind of coalesces. And I think we realize that we're spinning out of control. So I think, yeah, we're starting to realize we've got to do something for our children, our grandchildren, the people we leave this earth to.
Yeah. And it seems that quite often the increased conflict, problems, and all of those things seem to, I guess, maybe motivate people into action who would probably not do so otherwise.
Well, you know, for several hundred years now, we've hired politicians to run the planet. So how's that working? I don't think it's working too well.
No, that is true. And I guess the way to make the change is put different people with different perspectives in charge.
Well, I think even before that, we have to become a little self-aware. We have to become inspired. Great title to your podcast. We have to become more enlightened.
Mm.
But that's not necessarily such a difficult process. You know, we mistakenly think that evolution creates intelligence, that, you know, given the eons enough time, as the eons go by, we become smarter.
Hmm.
But that's not the way it works.
Hmm.
Evolution does not create intelligence. Intelligence creates evolution. So intelligence is what created the universe. Intelligence is incorporated into every living thing. As we avail ourselves of that, as we allow that consciousness to be incorporated into our being, then we evolve. So
yeah.
Intelligence is what creates evolution. See, evolution is not something that happens to us. Evolution is something we're in charge of.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, and I think people have lost sight of that individual power.
Well, yeah, we see a lot of conflict, we see a lot of turmoil, and that, of course, creates even more fear than what's causing the turmoil to begin with.
Yeah. So I believe you said that peace of mind and world peace are inseparable. And I found that interesting. Can you explain that?
Well, we can't really be at peace without some peace of mind, and we can't have peace of mind while we're in total conflict. So they are part and parcel to each other. So we can't build a peaceful world if, as individuals, we live in fear. And, of course, there are a lot of entities, let's call them, or politicians or governments or people in the industry of war that don't mind creating that fear. That's where their power comes from.
Yeah.
But it's inner peace and global peace are reflections of our consciousness in different scales. How we view the world and the actions we take are registered in the consciousness of the race. So that knowledge that individual actions affect the race consciousness should empower an individual.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I think if people begin at home, so to speak, you know, with the peace of mind, that, you know, once elements of that are shown, it does ripple out to people in their sphere.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about war and conflict, and you describe it as a business. You know, and I can't remember which president it was that talked about the military machine, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, just the idea that it's a business, and how do you deal with such a large business? An impactful business.
Well, and I think it was Eisenhower who you're referring to that warned us against the military-industrial complex.
Exactly.
But, you know, we produce on this planet $72 million of weapons for war every single hour. So it is definitely a global business. It's organized, financed, marketed, perpetuated by systems that profit from that fear. So we intend to run peace as a business, just like war is run as a business. War, you know, persists not because it works, but because it pays.
Yeah. You know, and we've seen in recent years, you know, the reference to we aren't engaged in war, but the weapons that we make and sell are involved, very much involved with that process.
Well, war and the weapons we build and the destruction we wreak on this planet are just extensions of our internal dialogue. So our expectations have a great deal to do with what materializes. So there's a good quote in the book, all the flowers of tomorrow are in the seeds of today. Mm-hmm. So the seeds we plant today are going to produce exactly what we expect them to produce.
Yeah.
You know, the seeds of a daisy always produce a daisy. It's not with you plant daisy seeds, you're not going to get corn.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so if we implant the seeds of fear and retaliation, that will have one consequence. If we plant the seeds of compassion and forgiveness and so forth, that will produce a different result. You still have to water those.
Right.
So if you don't water it, it still isn't going to go anywhere, regardless of whether it's a negative or a positive seed.
Yeah. You got to tend to the growth of mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is that you have planted, for sure. Now, you argue that violence is learned and not natural. I found that interesting. So can you explain your view of violence and its presence in our world?
Well, this goes back to the old concept that you hear once in a while that, well, humanity is just a violent species. That's our nature. But that's not really true either. Are we violent because that's our nature, or are we violent because we're in denial of our nature? I say it's because we're in denial. We don't yet know who we are. We certainly don't appreciate our value as a species. So how could you be anything but violent? Because a species that's that confused about its role in the universe is going to exhibit aberrant behavior.
Yeah.
So violence is a learned response. If it were inherent, then peace would be impossible, but it's an acquired mutation.
Okay.
Brought on by propaganda and so forth. So we can unlearn it as easily as we learned it.
Yeah. Now, this is kind of this question just kind of popped into my head. With the idea of war being a business, is it possible to make peace a business?
Absolutely. It can be funded. It can be promoted. It can be educated. So yes, whatever we put our attention and resources towards, we can produce. We have to be willing to risk peace. There's an entire chapter on the risk of peace. Peace is simple because peace is a reflection of truth. That doesn't mean it's easy. It still takes work. It still takes dedication. We have to be willing to risk peace as much as we are willing to risk war.
Okay, so where is the risk? I mean, what is the risk of going down a peaceful road?
Well, there's all sorts of risks. Suppose it doesn't work. Suppose demilitarization causes a conflict. Suppose that we get it wrong. Suppose that it creates more fear. So there is a risk of, at least in some people's minds, and certainly will be promoted, there is a risk in demilitarization. Mm-hmm. At least right now, there's, you know, a status quo.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's a dysfunctional status quo. We're destroying the planet we live on. We're killing each other at an ever-increasing rate. So it won't work indefinitely.
Right.
We have to solve our systems that rely on fear.
Okay. Now, I suppose that when it comes to nuclear weapons, that you don't find them very useful.
Well, it's kind of an odd thing that, you know, at one time we had 50,000 nuclear weapons so that we'd be safe. Now we have 12,500 nuclear weapons so that we'll be safe. But, you know, nuclear weapons by themselves diminish society. They rob us of a peaceful world. They're a deterrent to peace, not necessarily to war. They're irrational. They're destructive by their very nature because they rob us of financial resources. They threaten the existence of the species. They're counterproductive. They're dangerous because they're susceptible to miscalculation and accident. And they're unnecessary because we already know what we need to know to eliminate them.
Yeah, I've never found it logical, you know, that we can kill ourselves or end humanity multiple times over. It's like, once would be enough, you know.
It should be, you know, and it doesn't take that much. 100 nuclear weapons based on whether it's an air or ground burst and what kind of targets, oil refineries and so forth. It would take about 100 to create a nuclear winter.
Wow.
So the threshold is a little lower than most people think.
Yeah, that to me makes sense. You know, in the fact that that quantity and the effect of that quantity being used would be what one would think would have been a deterrent from ever being used.
Well, we've come close, but this gives you a different perspective. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, you're familiar with the Doomsday Clock?
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
So during the Cuban Missile Crisis, it was 7 minutes till midnight. And right now, it is 90 seconds till midnight.
It's hard to comprehend that it's so close.
Well, the people that claim we're too intelligent to destroy ourselves are the same people that claim we need massive defense because we're a defective species.
Yeah.
You know, which is it?
I know, exactly. And you'll never get a straight answer about it. So now, you also describe all wars are civil wars. And I liked your perspective of that. So can you share that with the listeners?
Well, we like to, and of course the war industry promotes this, we like the idea of separateness and they're others and they're not like us and they're different. So of course they're worth less, so they're of less value. But that helps us justify war. But humanity is one species. So there's really no such thing as a foreign war, only conflicts between members of the same family. Until we understand that, then we'll continue to harm ourselves under this illusion of separation.
Yeah, it makes sense. But then, you know, civil wars have gone on for forever. So, you know, it seems that simply the idea of knowing that we are all of the same species, you know, same family, so to speak, that alone, you know, won't help curb those interfamily fights.
Well, you know, war itself is, there's a difference between conflict and war. War, as I refer to it, is more of an institutionalized thing. It changed about 10,000 years ago. So basically, we've been at war for 10,000 years. And so obviously, deterrence hasn't worked. But there is a difference between conflict and war. And peace is not the absence of conflict. Mm. It's the management of conflict. Whereas war is the absence of management.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, you know, the idea of, you know, conflict being managed, the conflict will exist and can be managed, is something that I think people think of peace. They tend to go all in the fact that, you know, if there is peace, there is no conflict, there is no disagreement, there is just cooperation.
That's not really realistic. I mean, we need the different cultures and religions and views in this world. We don't all need to be the same, but we don't all need to kill each other over the differences either.
Yeah.
So we have a misunderstanding between power and force. The power is internal. And force is external. I think it was Jimi Hendrix that said, when the power of love overcomes the love of power, we shall know peace.
Oh, okay. I like that one. Yeah. And there's so much truth to that as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's pretty profound.
It is. I think the people who listen to the show are going to have several profound thoughts to be pondered afterwards. So now, military power. You know, you were talking about power. What does military power do for promotion of peace, or does it at all?
Well, it doesn't necessarily. There are instances. There are warlords. There are dominations of society. Until we can communicate better and reduce our fear and risk peace, there will be instances of defense, which is true defense from an oppressive regime, for instance. But even that has a limit to its longevity, because military power doesn't create security. Security comes from self-assurance in humanity's worth and our destiny. You can't bomb your way to safety.
Yeah.
So security is a psychological condition before it's a physical one. So we tend to confuse power with force.
Okay. So the person who doesn't feel that sense of security, then when it comes to their interaction in society, or their perception of conflict and war, there is going to be, if they're not secure with themselves or their placement in the world, that's an invitation to being influenced.
Well, they're more open to manipulation through that fear.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if you looked, Robert, at this planet, which is kind of my view, is from a few hundred miles out, and you looked at humanity, you would see 8.2 billion people scurrying around on the planet, killing each other. Well, a third of the population starving, while the other two-thirds build weapons to kill each other, to kill the healthy members. You would see this massive confusion that is going on, this almost panic, where we're also destroying the planet that we live in. So now we're in conflict with each other and the planet.
Yeah. And we know the planet will win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Exactly. Now, you have a perspective of the fifth dimension, and you describe it in the book. And I'm interested to see what your perspective of that is, and what is the likelihood of our little globe here of actually reaching that particular dimension.
Well, and the fifth dimension is a state of consciousness, and it involves concepts of polarity. It involves the fifth state of matter, which is the ether, and how we access that dimension. Because as Einstein knew, we cannot solve our problems with the same level of consciousness that created them.
Right.
This is kind of the science-y part of the book. So it would take the next hour to go over it, but
right.
You know, this book, The Way to World Peace, The Foundation, A Time for Humanity, this is really a revolution encased in a peace movement.
But as I was going through and reading all the different topics and the approach to those topics, it really presents a very different paradigm for the reader to encapsulate or kind of work toward, I guess, in a way, as far as being able to change their world around them.
Yeah, the premise, for instance, of the foundation is to unite humanity in order to save us from ourselves. Okay, so that's a pretty powerful concept, because once we do that, then these other problems we're trying to solve will be easily solvable. We're trying to solve dire poverty and constant conflict and wars and an impending water crisis we haven't even begun to address,
right,
and the destruction of our environment. We're trying to solve those while we're killing each other. That's like trying to have a dinner party while the house is on fire.
Yeah.
So our first step is a unification, belief in ourselves, our value, our worth as a species. When we realign our minds and our behavior and our efforts, we can't just think nice thoughts. We have to start demanding this of ourselves and our leaders. Because once we get beyond this next threshold, then these other problems we can solve together. They're solvable, but not while we're killing each other.
No. You kind of have to set the stage for problem solving in order to be able to start to address the issues. And like you say, you can't when you're killing each other.
And we don't have to worry about how.
Yeah.
The solutions will present themselves to us. When we are aligned with universal law, we don't have to worry about how to achieve something. It will happen for us.
Right. But we have to set the stage to allow that change to happen, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think it was Ronald Reagan that said something like, I think the people of the world want peace so badly, one of these days the politicians have to get out of the way and let them have it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. You know, that some wise words there for sure. Now, what about education? You know, the idea of, it seems to me that a lot of the things we're talking about require the need to educate the individual on certain perspectives or beliefs that they have been taught otherwise for decades or generations. So how do we begin to chip away at some of those very deeply held beliefs?
Well, of course, we have taught generation after generation to expect war. So once we expect peace, maybe we will see that change. I mean, every society, children are raised to, you know, they play war. They play war. So, you know, we tend to envision our future, but not in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So education is just part of this process. Inspiration, education, expectation, awareness, compassion.
Yeah.
Compassion alone would save this species. Those elements are not magical.
No.
They require some work, but that will produce the cooperation we seek.
Yeah. Now, the word woke has kind of taken on a very divisive kind of interpretation. Many of the actions and beliefs and, you know, and feelings that you talked about that are necessary, you know, would kind of fall under that idea of woke being the idea of, you know, being aware of, you know, the consequences of life's, you know, inhumane or unfair treatment. So in your view, you know, does some of the characteristics for this new peaceful outlook or action, how do you present that as something that's not woke? You know, because it seems to me that, you know, whenever that word comes up, there's, you know, usually a very specific, you know, feelings about the idea, you know, and some of it, you know, the negative connotations or the perceptions of some people, you know, some of the beliefs, you know, is not what they believe or, you know, not something they want. So in that sense, in that view, how do we get people to embrace the positive aspects of a peaceful generation or peaceful world? How do we get them to embrace that, you know, as something that's good and not part of some, you know, left-wing conspiracy or something like that?
Well, and I think there is a big difference between an awakening or or awareness and, as you said, being woke. I think woke is kind of more of a political term.
Right.
I think, in my personal opinion, that kind of has some connotations of entitlement.
Okay.
The book itself, it's interesting. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon, Robert. People that have read the book that are politically liberal think
mm-hmm.
it's a liberal work. And people that are conservative think it's a conservative work.
Oh, how interesting.
It's really interesting because I think I just hit some nerves that appeal to all of humanity.
Wow.
So that's kind of, I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Well, it does, because, you know, if you get that kind of reaction from your book, from both ideological, you know, opposing ideologies, then there's got to be that golden thread of truth to it that people can.
Well, and, you know, sometimes you hear this concept, you're just a dreamer or whatever.
Right.
Well, that's kind of a compliment, I guess, because everything we've accomplished on this planet has been accomplished by dreamers. The
right.
artists and the poets and the musicians and the scientists and the engineers and people, everybody that dreamed of something, that's who has moved us forward. There's
right.
always people that, oh, you can't sail too far, you'll fall off the earth, and man will never fly, and da-da-da-da-da. And all these excuses and reasons why something can't happen, but it's the dreamers that made it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the dreamers. You know, I love the idea.
That's the only thing that's going to move us forward. Certainly the people that are promoting fear are pulling us backwards. So,
yeah, and the whole sense of dreaming is for a better future.
Well, we're in charge of it. You know, nobody's going to come down to save us. So we better do it ourselves, and we better do it pretty fast. We have about a 40-year window. It's probably not our last window, but it's our last best window.
Yeah, wow. Well, we're getting down toward the end of the show, Ken. So what practical steps can individuals take today to start working toward that peaceful world or even that own sense of inner peace?
Well, I think we need to question some of the decisions that are being made by different groups or countries or societies. We need to reject fear as the principle we operate by. We need to question the normalization of violence. We need to heal this planet. And this is one very good way to do that is through the realization of our value, going to the website, Time for Humanity. You can sign up as a free member. You can get the newsletter. You need to spread this philosophy around this planet, which is certainly achievable. And then you get this inertia where you get a tipping point where we become a different species. We become the species we were meant to be. So all that has happened before, the war, the crime, the poverty, the degradation, da 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 da, is just noise. Once we pass through this venturi of our own birth unto ourselves, once we allow our species to be born unto itself, all of this goes away. Now, I know that sounds very esoteric and, wonderful, ethereal thought. It's actually achievable.
And those spherical thoughts and all of those things have to start somewhere. I mean, once you imagine it and start nurturing it, then when it becomes a reality in your world.
I mean, where would we be if people never ventured beyond, with the field of medicine or any of the advancements that we've made, if we never tried? We should be exploring space instead of killing each other. There is where you turn the defense industry toward something positive. They'll make even more money at that. So we need to redirect our efforts to dominate each other into the exploration of space.
Yeah, I agree. So one last question about talk to us a little bit about the foundation, timeforhumanity.org. Tell us about what their mission is and how people can help there.
Well, the core is to unite humanity in order to save us from ourselves, but our individual missions are in those four areas: poverty, militarization of the planet, water crisis, and the collapse of the ecosystem. So we will continue to work on those ventures, but the progress really in a lot of those areas is based on the demilitarization and the conversion of humanity into a peaceful species. So we're not broken. We're just unfinished. We don't have to make peace happen. We don't have to invent it. It's something natural to us. It's actually encoded into our DNA. So we have to allow that to be. And go to the website, get involved, spread the movement of mankind's mind upon this earth. Now that we have, even though technology has created a lot of problems and a lot of opportunities, we are now more connected than ever before. So we now have the mechanism to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Ken, thank you for your time. This has really been a wonderful conversation, and I'm sure it's given me and the listeners much to ponder. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Peace is not as complicated as we're making it. We just need to get down to business here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The business of peace.
Yeah, now's the time, right? Time is
It
up.
is.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Robert, and maybe we'll talk again.
Sounds great. Yeah. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Kenneth Paul Tallison, author of The Way to World Peace, and Idea Whose Time Has Come. And again, you can find out more by visiting the website, atimeforhumanity.org. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.